Hi, this is Brian with Brian's Spain Domain, and this week we are going to do things a little bit differently due to a health issue. I had a detached retina and had to have it fixed with the procedure about a week ago, but that has obviously made things a little bit more complicated for me in terms of preparing these podcasts and researching and things like that. So a couple of the series that we have been working on have been temporarily delayed, so we'll get back to them as soon as possible. Anyway, the show must go on though, so what we've decided to do is change the format a little bit, and I'm just sort of going to wing this podcast, so to speak, and talk a little bit about a story related to history, not so much Spanish history, but history in general, but involving some Spaniards. So let's give that a start. Anyway, this is a story based on a very famous historical event. We're going to go back over 100 years to 1912, April 1912, when you should probably know what I'm talking about by now. If not, let me give you some more clues here. We are talking about what I think is easily the most famous maritime accident of all time, involving probably the most famous ship of all time, the Titanic. Okay, and this is an event that is still very famous to this day. It's interesting because there have been a lot of tragedies since then, probably worse in certain ways, that don't seem to have the staying power that this one does. Just going back to more recent years, I mean, you have 9/11, which this year is the 20th anniversary, so there's been more talk about it than in recent years. But, if you ask young kids, 11, 12 years old, 13 years old, a lot of them may not even know what you're talking about when you mention 9/11, or might have a vague recollection of someone telling them about it or something like that. Another one, the 2004 tsunami on December 26, which reportedly killed over 200,000 people. I think something like 225,000 people. I mean, those are catastrophes, disasters of biblical proportions, and yet. Perhaps because the world is the way it is these days, and news and information comes and goes at a lightning pace. Well, these are things that don't seem to last as long as this other event, which happened over 100 years ago. Obviously, Hollywood has had something to do with that. There's no doubt about it. But the story itself has this staying power, which I think is. Has to do with a lot of factors. I think a part of it has to do with the fact that it represents so many things of our world at that time, where man was becoming more and more modern, and probably getting a little bit full of himself, and thinking that they could come up with a ship that would not be sinkable. So that sort of folly had something to do with it. And so much about this accident resonates with us in terms of human nature. How people act, how people behave, characteristics. We had plenty of examples of bravery and selflessness, and at the same time, there are other examples of arrogance, stupidity, cowardice. So it's sort of all there. In addition, you have the class system, where you have not just the first, second, and third class in on a boat. Obviously, if you were in the first class, if you were in first class, and especially if you were a woman or a child, your chances of surviving were much higher than if you were in third class. So that's just a few of the things. I don't think I'm saying anything that's groundbreaking, but there's certainly a number of elements about this accident that seem to make us continue. It's sort of a part of our collective memory, and it will be that way for quite some time. In any event, this accident, as I was saying, it doesn't really have anything to do with Spanish history. We'll more often associate it with British and American history because they were obviously the majority of the passengers, and the shipping line itself was British. But there were foreign passengers on the boat too, from many different countries. And from Spain, there were actually 10 Spaniards, 10 passengers who were from Spain, of which seven actually survived, and they weren't all from first class. So that's actually a pretty good percentage, all things considered. But anyway, we're going to focus on a story that involves three people who were in first class. And I'm going to tell this story because it's probably the most famous of all the stories involving the Spaniards. And it's not probably famous internationally. I don't think anyone knows about this. And even in Spain, it's not that famous, but there are people who have heard of it. And I learned about this many, many years ago, and I was very much intrigued by it. And I think it's a fascinating story. And also, it seems to fit so perfectly with what I was telling you before about this accident. So anyway, this is a story about a young couple of newlyweds. His name is Victor Peñasco, and her name is Maria Josefa Pérez. And a third person who was Maria Josefa's lady-in-waiting, her name was Fermina Oliva. She was from Cuenca, actually from the town of Uclés, which is a very pretty town if you ever get a chance to see it. Anyway, the bride and groom came from very wealthy families. And let me give you an idea of just how rich they were. They were actually married in 1910 and had spent the next year and a half on their honeymoon traveling around Europe. They had spent somewhere in the neighborhood of 800,000 euros so far on that trip. And in April of 1912, they found themselves in Paris, and they still had no plans on returning to Madrid yet. So we're talking about some very well-off families. And the story goes that they were at the famous French restaurant, Maxim's, when Victor sort of came across a brochure or something like that advertising the maiden voyage of the Titanic. And he got very excited about it. He said that's something that they had to do. And his young wife, Josefa, agreed. And so they booked a cabin suite. I think it cost somewhere like 8,000 euros to go on the Titanic on its maiden voyage. Now, even though they were really excited, not everyone was thrilled by the idea. One was Fermina, the lady in waiting, who probably had never been on a boat before and had heard about shipping accidents at different times. And she wasn't keen on that idea, but that was her job. And the other person who was not terribly enthralled was Victor's mother. Her name was Purificación, and she had a bad feeling about this. Now, some people talk about this as sort of a premonition that the mother had. She could sort of somehow have this ESP and sense that the disaster was impending, or imminent. But mothers get worried all the time, so I sort of not gonna attribute it to that. I'm just gonna chalk this one down to moms being worried about their sons and thinking of their health and safety, and just didn't like the idea. But anyway, be it what it may, the fact is she didn't want him to go on that trip, and she said as much. She said, "Whatever you do, don't take that boat." But unfortunately, they already had their tickets and were planning on going. So Victor came up with an idea which he thought was pretty sneaky on one hand, but ingenious on the other. He didn't want his mom to worry. So what he did was buy 10 postcards or something like that, and he wrote a note to his mother on each postcard. They were of different parts of Paris and the surrounding area, maybe Versailles. And he told his valet to send one off each day. Okay, that way his mother would receive the postcard and think that he was in Paris. In the meantime, he and his wife and Fermina would go up to the north of France to Cherbourg, where the Titanic would be making a port of call, and they would board it there. And that's what they did. They got on the ship and headed across the ocean on their dream come true voyage to America on the greatest, biggest, most unsinkable, indestructible ship of all time, and very luxurious at the same time. And for the first few days, well, they were enjoying this voyage the way everyone was, okay, living it up, full of luxury, fine dining, celebrating, and excited about the idea of getting to New York in record time. There are reports that many of the other passengers around them noticed just how in love they were with each other, and they were sort of like turtle doves. So they sort of gathered or got a lot of attention for that. But anyway, we all know that on the night of April 14th, very late, just before midnight, the Titanic struck an iceberg and things got very ugly very quickly. For these three Spaniards, the story is sort of similar to what you hear a lot about what happened after that. In other words, I think it was Fermina who was sewing something in her cabin, which was right across the hall from the cabin where Victor and Josefa were staying. And she noticed sort of a rumble. And then she noticed that the engine stopped. And that concerned her, so she went over and asked Victor if everything was okay. He assumed it was, but he said he'd go up on deck and see what was up. And that's what he did. He went up on deck, and he came down a few minutes later, and he said, well, things are not that good. And actually, the ship is sinking, so we need to get going quickly. Just take whatever you need and leave everything else behind. So the three of them went up, and in a few minutes, as we all know, lifeboats were prepared to get women and children off the ship as fast as possible. And we all know from now that there weren't enough lifeboats for everyone, which is why they gave priority to women and children, and especially to the elite. So Josefa was going to be put on lifeboat number 8. When she realized that she was going to be separated from her husband, she couldn't bear the thought. She grabbed onto him, and they couldn't pull her away. And she kept crying, saying, no, 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 don't leave me, don't leave me, I don't want to leave you. But finally, they were able to sort of peel her off, with the help of Victor, who sort of dumped her into the boat, because he had to be forceful here. If not, she wasn't going to go on the boat. And he said his final words to her, Pepita, that's what he would call her, may you always be happy. Then we had Fermina, who at this time people had sort of forgotten about. Unfortunately, these things happened to the servants. But she was crying and screaming so much that one of the crew on of the Titanic grabbed her and sort of dropped her into the boat as the boat was sort of descending from the ship. But anyway, she was safe. And they got down to the water, and they started to row away. Now, on this boat was Lady Rothes, who was actually depicted in the movie. And she is also famous for how she handled the situation under so much stress. She actually, on that lifeboat, helped with the steering. She helped people who had injuries. And she also, and we know this because she reported this, or told this to a reporter several days later in New York, that one of the things that was very difficult for everyone on that lifeboat to handle with or to deal with was the Spanish woman, and we're talking about Josefa, who just was crying uncontrollably. And she felt so bad for her that she had to stop taking the rudder. She handed it over to her cousin, I believe. And she went over to Josefa to comfort her. And she did what she could, because she said everyone on the boat was affected by this. More than anything, they just felt so bad for this young woman. So that's an interesting sort of bit of this story. As we know, the ship went down. And later on, in the early morning hours, The HMS Carpathia arrived. It came as fast as it could, but it was just too far away, and started collecting the people from the different lifeboats. And they got lifeboat number 8, where Josefa and Fermina were, and the rest of the passengers on that boat and from other boats. And they then took them on to New York. Anyway, Josefa and Fermina survived and were okay. And it was presumed that Victor went down with the ship. They got to New York, and I forgot to mention this other thing is that as the iceberg struck, and I guess the ship went down, according to the story, Victor's mother back in Madrid was having a late dinner, and it must have been when the boat struck the iceberg, because that would have been around 11:30, and would have been feasible for her to be eating at that time. Anyway, a dead fly fell on her plate, and she uttered the word, the sentence, "Something's happened to Victor." Now that's what people say. Obviously, it's difficult to corroborate nowadays. But anyway, Victor is presumed dead. So that brought up an issue, okay, that happened to a lot of people apparently, especially when we're talking about wealthy people and wealthy families, and especially if we're talking about couples, married couples. And what happened was, according to law, now this would have to be Spanish law because this is what would affect her, a person who is missing would not be presumed dead for 20 years. And if they were not presumed dead, what did that mean? Well, that meant that Josefa would not be able to A, collect inheritance from her husband, and B, not be able to marry. Now, we're not talking next day, but at some point in the future, or she'd have to wait 20 years. So that posed a problem for them. And this is sort of another twist in this story. I mean, here it was, what everyone was talking about on the ship is how in love they were, and how sad she was when he died. And I believe it. But then after things calmed down, a lot of times people start getting very practical and very pragmatic. And so they had a problem on their hands because they didn't have proof, definitive proof, that Victor had died. So what they did was, now here the story gets a little bit confusing because you see lots of different versions, or I've heard lots of different versions, and it's some say Fermina went up there to Canada, and that doesn't seem to make much sense. But she may have, or if not, someone else, a representative of the family, went up to Halifax. Now, that's where many of the bodies that were recovered in the water, that were floating, were taken to Halifax. And of those, I don't know how many, but there were probably several hundred. But there are still over 100 bodies or tombs there in the cemetery in Halifax from that accident, from the Titanic. But anyway, to make a long story short, someone goes up to Halifax and basically says, "I'm here to identify Victor Peñasco's body." And it's assumed that they never had that body, and the reason being because there is no tomb with his name on it in that cemetery or in one in Spain. But what they did do is said, "They hear the some of the bodies. Do you recognize any of them?" It was sort of like with a poke, poke, and wink, wink. "Yes, and that's his body right there. Are you sure?" "Yes." So they wrote out a death certificate saying that he had died, and with that, they could take it back to Spain, and all the other administrative obstacles were removed, and Josefa would be able to marry again, which she did several years later in 1918. She would eventually have three children and would live until 1972, I believe, when she was 83. And Fermina Oliva also returned to Spain. She returned to Madrid, and she returned to her former job. She was a seamstress, so she returned to being a seamstress. I think she had enough of her previous career as a lady in waiting, and lived out her days as a seamstress in Madrid, and lived to the ripe old age of 96, I believe. I believe she died in 1968, and is buried in the Almudena Cemetery. So there you have it, my friends. Okay, it's excuse the sort of the choppy version here, and maybe some of the sloppy editing, but this is we are limited in our capabilities for this week. Anyway, I hope you have enjoyed this story, or at least found it interesting. And if you have any comments or questions or suggestions, please leave them with us. And if you're interested in supporting us, please check us out at Patreon. And that's all for now. Stay safe, stay healthy, healthier than I am, and hasta pronto.